parents never gave me a religious education, chose not to, and I never really, if I went into a church, it would probably collapse. I better be careful. Yeah, I'm the same way. I'm basically dressed in rags right now. This ragged cloth jacket, you know, these trousers that are all, you know, with holes in them or whatever, this old T-shirt, you know, again, for the same reason. I'm not in school. I'm not working. I'm, pretty much retired. So who am I going to impress? I mean, I'm even to the point where, gee, you know, shave and get a haircut. At least try to do that. But, yeah, I know how it is when you no longer have to keep up appearances. You know, the downside of that, too, is I think if you don't have to keep up appearances, you sort of, and you let yourself go. I don't know, maybe that's, you know, keeping up appearances also sort of does boost your self-esteem. So, you know, get a shave and get some nice clothes.
Let me say this politely. When I kind of started thinking about not working, I took care of my mother and daddy. I did, you know, I don't want to say retired. That's a horrible word. But I took care of mother and daddy a lot. I just swear to God, I took care of my parents. And because my siblings had already croaked out. And so I went 17 years without a haircut. 17 years. I had hair down to my fanny. I'm serious. It was all, and it was pretty blonde, I thought. I did not know until they cut it that it was gray and old.
You pull off the old man ponytail thing. Or the, yeah, you know, in my case, it just looks unkempt. And, you know, I'm not trying to make any kind of political statement. So I could just, you know, I should just, like, get a haircut and get a real job. Put on some nicer clothes. Maybe you feel better about yourself.
You know, the interesting thing is, I could mow, I could work on the farm with my hair down. My wife would let me. With my hair down. But then, if I wanted to leave the property, I had to have my hair up, and my wife mandated it. So I would go in, she'd pull a chair to the, after I washed and dried it and all that stuff, she'd pull this chair out in the middle of the room, and man, she would brush it. Can you believe? You cannot imagine how good it is to have someone brush your hair. And she would draw it straight out. She would just brush it. I had my own brush. I still have my own brush. Of course, I keep it the way it was in 1970 when they drafted me nowadays. But she would brush my hair. And it was wonderful. I'm telling you, that is the next best thing to sex you'll ever have in your life, is your wife brushing your hair.
Well, it'd be the only thing you have to sex, but... yeah, I'm not sure I got a whole lot of hair left. But, yeah, that could be quite pleasant. You know, guys don't usually... We're not really big into hairbrushing. But, yeah, I can see where that, you know, that would make you feel better. You know, it's like when you go to brush your favorite horse or whatever. Or, no, the cats. You know, I've got these 12 or 15 cats here. Well, I used to have this one long-haired cat. And if you pick up the brush, she'll come running over to you. Oh, please, 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 brush me. Well, the long-haired cat, you pretty much have to. But, yeah, you know, just simple things like that, I guess you learn to appreciate.
Cats that we kept for 19 years. One was conceived beneath my bed. Well, I'm sure of that. And so his name was Harry, H-A-R-R-Y, lived to be 19. And the other one I picked up on the railroad track, his name was Seven, S-E-V-I-N, because I treated him with seven dust to get the fleas off of him. And so, but we kept him. And, you know, when Harry died, I searched that farm forever, and I finally found him. And he was coming back to the house. They were loud inside, and he was coming back to the house. But when Harry died, Seven, S-E-V-I-N, went into mourning like you would not believe. He made noises like you've never heard. Wow, that kind of noise. I did not know cats that lived together all their lives would mourn.
Sure, I've seen that. Yeah, I've been alive. For some reason, I've been with these furballs a long time. So I've seen pretty much every kind of cat behavior there is, including some you don't want to know about. But yeah, if you have two of them that are close, that's definitely the case. You know, the same is with humans. You know, they're not the unemotional creatures you think they are. They can be very kind, very loving, very, very caring for each other. And, of course, the flip side of that is, you don't want to know what sometimes happens to the kittens. They can also be extremely savage. You know, let's just say, I found a headless kitten on more than one occasion. I think that's Mama Cat saying, I don't want to be a Mama Cat anymore.
Both these were males, and they were fixed, and we took care of them and loved them. And they had traits. I mean, they did things. Like Seven would come and bump you on your forehead to get your attention. He would take his head and bump you to get your attention. And Harry, of course, was equally as loving. And Kim and they were our family. I mean, kids gone, everything else out. These guys became very much our family, and we loved them both, and we did. And Kim wants to do something now. I don't want to. I mean, I feel like I'm gonna, you know, they were 19? I don't think I have the time to do that again. And so, but we did love our cats, and she would like to have a little puppy, but I'm not so sure that I want to get into that.
I had this Maine Coon I called Brutus. Maine Coons are a big breed. Maine Coons, Norwegians, and there's one other breed that tends to get really big. Ragdolls, maybe. They tend to get like 15 or 20 pounds. But they're also gentle giants. I mean, you would have to expect this thing to roar at you, but it barely makes a peep. And they sing. They've got this kind of trilling sort of, I can't describe it. But that was one of the most lovable cats I ever had. And, yeah, he would bump his head against you, rub against you. You know, when I would come through the door, he would run up to me and then, you know, run over the couch, run on the bed. I want you to join me in the bed. I want you to cuddle me, damn it. You know, he was very affectionate.
Because these cats were the same way. And I buried them on the most pinnacle place of that farm. the highest spot on the ground, and I buried them there. I regret selling the farm. I regret burying the cats there. I regret everything when it comes right down to it. And so, but Kim would like to have one of these, what do you call them, long-haired dachshunds? I don't even know what that thing looks like. And I really don't want one. And because I really just simply don't want one. WA4HNT Friday.
BKD2BG. Yeah, you know, I was never very much an animal person. I think that was Deborah's thing. She would bring home these little stray kittens and puppies. I used to just mostly tolerate them. But, you know, you get to like them over time. And, you know, I don't know so much about dogs, but cats, for some reason, always liked me. I never figured out why. Even as a child. You know, one got into the classroom one time, and out of 30 kids in the classroom, it immediately came over to me and jumped to my lap. So I don't know why the damn things like me. You know, maybe they sense something that they're very discerning creatures. So, you know, I've got, by this time, quite a few of them.
It's terrible for me to say, but I have an uncle who's long since passed. My dad's little brother, Uncle Billy. And Uncle Billy was kind to everything. And so I had some dad blame many cats that one Sunday morning I loaded them all up in a car, and because Uncle Billy did Sunday school, what do you call it? He taught Sunday school. And so I took them up to his house and with two of my boys, and I would drop them over the fence into his backyard. I did not realize Uncle Billy still had Rottweilers. That man went out and found a home for every one of those dadblame cats. And he came down here and said to my dad, Al, because they called my daddy by his A-L, Al. And someone dropped off, and Daddy said, well, it couldn't have been little Alton, meaning me, because he's in New Mexico. Thank you, Daddy, for giving me up so quickly. And so, and when I got ready to get rid of some goats, Daddy told me not to dump them off on Uncle Billy.
You sort of tossed them over the fence, figuring Uncle Billy would take care of them. Ooh, but the Rottweilers. Yeah, that's not good. I'm not a dog person generally, but I don't know, something about Rottweilers in particular. They're not one of your friendlier breeds. You know, they're like these stupid, vicious guard dogs that you have, you know, for whatever reason. Well, like pit bull terriers, although pit bull terriers really didn't used to be like that. They've been bred for meanness, but they really aren't. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not so much a dog person.
I had a pit bull here when I was a child, when I was really tiny. And he told me then, because I heard the myth, he said, you know, it's all the way you train them. And his brother had given him a pit bull. And so he brought it here. And that's the only experience I've had with pit bull. I don't want an animal that I might have to carry a pistol to get rid of. I mean, I said, God, these things can get, I mean, I don't want that. Now, Mother and Daddy have two houses right here in Pendleton. I say Mother and Daddy, they're mine. And, but Mother and Daddy have these two houses which I'm really anxious to get rid of. And so they have these two houses here. And I just, you know, I've got pets buried everywhere on this land. And I've seen cows thrash my daddy in the backyard. It's been such a fun life. It really has been. I have watched it all happen. Mother and daddy, you know, we were raised a certain way. And Barry, my older brother, was a little bit better at it than me. And then it came down to me, and, you know, I'm not good at it. I've been kicked, stomped, run over. I have been trampled. I have had every damn thing you can imagine happen to me. I've camped on the top of barns. I've watched people make out in the cars beneath me. And so, which didn't please them when they found out. And so, I mean, it's all been a hoot.
That could be fun for a while. What is it? Life goes on long after the thrill of living is gone. What were you planning on ever doing with any of these properties? Just hold on to them, or just sell them, or what? You know. If I had inherited properties like that, I don't know what I would do either. You could rent them out, too.
I'm up on the lake, and I regret that. That I regret. But I thought, you know, how hard do you want to work as you age? Everybody thought I'd work myself to death. And I just didn't want to work that hard. So my wife and I decided not to force me into that. And so we didn't. And I sold that. The house, the Gilliard house, which is antique. Antique, what do you call it? It's historic. And 1836, I mean, everybody walked on those floors. From Samuel Augustus Maverick to everybody else. Calhoun, everybody. I am one block off of St. Paul's. And two blocks away from Uptown Pendleton. So this is my parents' house. My mother was really good with money. She got her little seed money together. Oh, my goodness. And the girl, I told my daddy if he had let her go, he'd have been wealthy. And he told me he knew he would have been. And that was like 2 days before he died. And so we had such a great time. And this is where I was born, and this is where I was raised. I want to kind of hang on to this property at least for a year or two beyond me leaving it. I would like to be sure that I want to let it go before I let it go. And so, but the Gilliard house, I'll sell it tomorrow. It's listed now for like $500,000. And, I mean, you're not going to get that. So, it's, you know, but it is right in the heart of the fifth oldest town in South Carolina.
The other thing, you know, the older generation knew how to save money, possibly because they lived during a period of time when you actually could save money. You didn't have to work, you didn't have to have both parents each working two jobs just to break even. I mean, my dad worked for the city of New York for like 30 years in the Department of Welfare. You know, he was some low-level clerk, so what could that possibly have paid him? But, you know, back then, we lived in a rent-controlled apartment. And, you know, back then, you were able to save more of your money. Mostly because there was less stuff to buy. But other reasons as well. Cost of living was, in some ways, lower. and he saved it. He knew how to invest it. When he passed away, he had a stock portfolio that I think must have been worth about $1 million. So, for a civil servant salary, that wasn't bad.
I know what you're saying. Mother and Daddy saved, and Daddy didn't know what to do. Mother did. And she would put 2 pennies on the table, and when you look back down, there'd be 3. I mean, it was just that way with her. She was able to do it. Now, am I that good? No. She taught me, though, a great deal, a very great deal. And I am so very thankful for it, because when Kim retired, Cynthia's my sister, when Kim retired from Clemson, they don't insure the sibling, the spouse, and they don't, you know, they'll drop your insurance that day. And so they dropped me, and I had my little bit of health insurance, or not health insurance, but my little bit of insurance, and they dropped me. And okay, well, Kim's been on me to buy insurance to, you know, we've got money. And so, but she wanted me to buy insurance, and I've been saying, look, you can't insure me. I'm 70, 71. I'm 71 now. And so, and I said, they don't insure 71-year-old people. So I created a little account, and I named it my dad account. And I so much money in that thing now. It doesn't matter. I mean, you know, and I'm not paying that big of money on burying me. I'm not going to do it. That's not allowed. In fact, I went uptown today to the guy who used to build caskets, and he said, I don't do that anymore. And, really? You don't build caskets? Well, I don't want to go to the Presbyterian churchyard either. I want to go to a natural place up in the mountains, and my parents would just die if they knew, well, they're dead, but they would just pass away. Well, they've already done that too. They would just have a heart attack if they knew that I did not want to go to the Presbyterian churchyard. I got 17 graves over there. I don't need any more.
Four graves in Clinton, New Jersey that my parents bought probably in the early 50s. Maybe for a couple of $100s. I'm sure they're worth a whole lot more than that now. I got to figure out how to sell them, since I don't think I'm reasonably going to go back. You know, reasonably, I don't think I'm going to make any use of them myself. So I should find a way to get rid of them. But yeah, the other thing is, you know, it also depends. See, my parents, you know, back in the day you could save more, but also, you know, my dad also had a very, very generous retirement plan. When he took leave of the city of New York, I think around 1970 or so, the pension that he had a cost of living adjustment. So 10 years after he quit working, he was probably making as much money as he was before. I mean, he actually took some jobs, little jobs after he was retired, just to have something to do. You know, that's why I don't like the word retirement either. It's kind of like, if you retire, you stop. But yeah, you know, if people were able to save money then, it's not, I don't know if it was the cost of living proportional to your income was lower, or you were able to save more, or whatever it was, but, you know, the older people knew how to save.
Daddy, I mean, they did, mother did, daddy wasn't much for it, he didn't he left it up to Mother. That's all there was to it. He left it up to Mother. And but as far as knowing how to save, my mother would pinch a penny tighter than Dick's hatband, and she did. And I mean, and I'm so ashamed for so many things I've done as a young person. I really wish I could apologize and all that stuff, but you know, those days are gone. And but yeah, I know what you're saying. My daddy retired from Clemson. My wife retired from Clemson. And, but, you know, we don't really even glance around. We've taken care of our retirement. And that's a good thing. That's a really good thing. I told her when she came here, she ran that TV station for 4 years. And we agreed, because the first year I was married to my wife, nobody knew that she and I were married. And we did not tell anyone. And when Daddy asked me, when I did finally divulge it, only after her daddy came to find me, because he wanted to kill me, and so, but he found out we were married, and that made it all good. And I've got, like I mentioned a moment ago, I've got this brother-in-law who's a judge, and he's a good guy, a great guy. If you got to be judged, you want to be judged by him. And so he came up, he found out his son was maybe married or maybe living a little bit in sin. And so he ran up the road, grabbed the girl, grabbed the guy, and married them in their living room. And so now, Mother was not having any of that, and she wanted to be part of the marriage. And she, the daughter, was, she is from Mexico. And so we went down to San Miguel de Allende to enjoy their formal marriage after my brother-in-law had married him in a living room. It gets better.
So you didn't reveal that you were married right away. Was there some particular reason for that?
Married before, obviously. And so I don't know why we didn't tell it. We just didn't tell it. We bought property. We did living. We did everything. But we did not tell that we had married. And mother and my mother and daddy had never met her. And her mom and dad had met me. And I remember hearing what my father-in-law said about his former son-in-law. So I didn't want to risk that one. And so, but no, we just didn't tell it. We just didn't tell it. And only until it got to be kind of bad, meaning her dad was going to come kick my behind. He wanted to know what happened to it. We didn't talk a lot. And so he came looking for me. That's when we told it. And that we'd been married forever. And KB and I have been married for 35 years now. And so it was too funny. We had a great time. And she and I have a reasonably perfect marriage. Reasonably perfect. Capsule. I mean, put quotation marks around that one.
Any reasonably perfect, well, I don't know. My parents were married for 40 years or more, so I guess whatever whatever it takes to make it work, they figured it out. I've never been married, so I'm useless to ask. Deborah and I suppose, could have gotten married. I don't know, you know, it's just, some of us are just meant to be unbound or whatever. Some of us are just not, like, family-oriented.
I think we did it the right way. I really do. I do believe that. We owned a home in Norman, Oklahoma. She ran a TV station in Oklahoma City. We were there when, I can't say a polite word, McVeigh and Smith pulled their crud. And, I mean, really, when they did that Murrow building thing, I was actually right outside the city heading in, and they blew up that damn blame building. And so, you know, that's back in the era when we were around. And Kim and I have been married since dirt, basically. And she, like I say, is this skinny little white girl. Not so skinny anymore. Don't tell her I said that. We have, she's a little lazy nowadays. And, I mean, she's retired. She doesn't want to go do, I want to go do everything. And I am the very best walker on the face of the earth. My best time was 14.1 miles over four mountain ranges in one morning. And when my wife came to pick me up on that, you know, when she went for the extraction, I was drinking tea in the rain, hot tea in the rain.
I walked 5 or 10 miles at a clip. I thought nothing of it. I mean, now for whatever reason, yeah, I have to get back to trying to do some sort of exercise because it's not really good for me sitting around like this. But then again, you know, if you no longer have a job to go to or classes to go to or a business to run or whatever, you don't have any family or friends. Your family and friends are either dead or dead to you. You know, it's not so good because you start to fall into a pattern or start to fall into a rut. You know, what do I do with my time? You know, what do I do all day? What interests me? And that's maybe kind of the pattern I'm in now.
I understand. Kim and I, I have what they call neuropathy. 20 years ago, I'd never heard of the word. And the neuropathy has gotten very severe. And I can still fly. I can still I don't drive a lot. I take golf carts. I love my golf carts. And but I don't enjoy driving. I've got this 2018 Silverado. It's got 39,000 miles on it, and everyone else has driven it more than me. I have not driven it probably 400 miles. I just have not, and I just don't care to do it. Now, when Kim was willing to put up with me, and I disappear for days, and I've done all the major hikes. I've done them all. And I was going to do more, but it just kind of came up, this neuropathy thing. And it means that you cannot, I don't feel my feet anymore. And I don't feel my calves. My thighs hurt. But I don't feel my feet. And that's a problem because I would leave. I would go. I'd be gone by myself. The doctors went nuts with me. But, you know, if God takes me, he'll know first. Everybody else will find out second. And so that's where I always looked at it. And Kim put up with it. The worst thing a man can have is a wife that will let him.
To know. You know, that's why I haven't really made much in the way of those sorts of arrangements. My opinion is, you know, wrap me in a couple of contractor bags and throw me in the trash. Because when you're gone, that's basically all you are anyway. I never understood the whole funerary ritual of, you have to be buried or cremated. You got to put this vault or mausoleum or this nice coffin under the ground. Yeah, the dead guy is the last guy to know. But what was I going to segue into before that? I forget. Yeah, no, I have some kind of nerve or muscle damage, too, or something. I think it's in the category of, like, CFS or fibromyalgia or something like that. I don't think it's MS. MS would have gotten a lot worse by now, because I've had these symptoms for quite a while. But, yeah, I know what it's like to, you know, get up and really not be able to move, or not want to move, or it hurts to move. You know, that's... Hey, what can I say? That's getting old.
Very much a part of getting older. I've always been an outdoors person. I've always camped. I've always done this and that. Can you imagine sleeping 10 miles from the next human beating heart? I mean, well, how do you bed down? I don't sleep on the ground. I will never do that again. I sleep in the trees. I know that sounds silly, but no. I throw a hammock. I go up into the trees. I do not sleep on the ground. I've had everything happen beneath me, bears and such. I just do, and we don't talk about certain things, but I have slept literally 10 miles from the next human beating heart.
I don't know, it seems like in the past couple of years I've been consciously or unconsciously pushing away from people. It's like, why am I trying to isolate myself even more? Now, if I could live on the far side of the moon, I would. I mean, I was never really that gregarious to begin with, but lately I don't seem to have the patience to want to deal with most people. Does that make me antisocial or just, you know, just tired of dealing with things? Just tired of dealing with these idiots.
I don't deal with people. I really don't. I've been a ham for over 50 years. I've been a pilot for, I guess 50 years. And I've done everything. I just don't want to go through it anymore. But no, I have laid down in the woods. Best sleep you'll ever get in your life is laying down in the woods alone.
Bang, ideally you gotta be off the ground. You're not really sure what's gonna, if you're actually at ground level, I don't know what's crawling around down there. So you just, I guess, throw a net between two trees. But yeah, you know, I was never a people person anyway, so, you know, that kind of lifestyle would probably, you know, I'd like to be a park ranger or something. I sit in my little hut waiting, you know, or whatever, waiting for, you know, I go out and I don't have to deal with anyone, you know. As I said, if I could live on the far side of the moon. Hey, what's the status of Antarctica? You can't homestead Antarctica, can you? No one really owns it, but legally, can I go plant the flag there and say, I want this part of the ice shelf for me? Now, you probably can't do that.
Alaska, because my wife told me early she'd leave me if I wanted to go to Alaska. I wanted to go. I used to get job offers from up there. And Kim just, I mean, I got a lot of good job offers from up there. And but she said she'd leave me. Okay. So I actually had to hang on to her and did not take her. But I am interested in Alaska. I have always been interested in Alaska. What a great place to go play.
I said Antarctica, but okay, Alaska too. I'm sure there's places in Alaska where you'll never meet another human being for, 50 miles in any direction. I don't know if I'd like that climate, too. Well, not Antarctica either, for that matter. But I gotta see what the international status of Antarctica is. Can I go plant the flag there?
I mean, if, you play these guys, us, we say, well, if I didn't have a wife, what would I... Okay, that being said, well, I'd have a three-wheeled Harley. It would go on and on. The stuff I would do if she just let me. But like I say, the worst thing you can do is have a wife that will let you. And she has let me do everything. I have walked off into the forest and been gone for ever. The AT, the Foothills Trail, all these things. I just don't show back up forever. And she's always tolerated me. And every night, I do not carry cell phones. I just don't. But I do carry, some ham equipment because I trust it more, and it's gotten me out of plights. I've gotten out of situations because I had ham equipment, and I did. And so, but I've enjoyed fairly good health all my life, and KB has been just as good to me as any man could ever wish for. I don't know what to say about that, but she's always been good to me. And her son, the child that I claim, because I kind of raised him, is the best man I've ever known. That boy, he's my Eagle Scout, and I'm an Eagle Dad. And he's my Eagle Scout, he's my Marine. 4 years. Then he kissed a pretty girl, and he wouldn't re-up. He wanted to come home to Morton kiss her. Now they've got a pretty little family, and but he's the best man I've ever known. He's my Clemson grad. I knew he didn't want to teach, so he's a cop, and he's the only man I feel comfortable with when a gun is in the house. He does not carry. He will not carry a gun. I put the gun safe in his walk-in closet, and he will not carry a firearm. He walks into the house, throws them into the safe, and they don't come out until he's got to go back on duty. He's a special kid to me, and he's now getting like 40-something. So people are getting older.
Everyone's suddenly older. Yeah, I'm not a, okay, I'm a northerner, so, I don't know what, what is the obsession with firearms down here, I've noticed? I mean, I'll talk to you about firearms, I'm knowledgeable about them, but it seems like people down here seem to have an unhealthy fascination. I was at a Quick Trip station, and someone gets out of the car. He's not wearing any kind of police uniform or police insignia, and he's carrying some kind of high-capacity handgun, and he's got at least two extra magazines. Can you carry now? In this state, they did this. You could openly carry a pistol.
License down here. Excuse me, I'm so sorry. But you still got to be licensed down here. But we have a lot of good hunters. I'm not a hunter. I don't go hunting. My brother was a hunter. I'm not. I'm not even a fisher. And I would like to fish. I wanted to learn to fly fish. And my brother was going to teach me, but he had the unhealthy task of dropping dead in a house that I built. And I swear to God, Barry, I cannot believe that he walked into that house because he wanted to help with Mother after Daddy died. And he goes up there, and 2 or 3 months later, drops dead. I swear. I could spit, and I do. I cannot believe that people... Barry was a big gun person. I'm not. I don't carry. I don't want to. And but Barry was a big gun guy. And, you know, Daddy gave me certain things when he died. And I gave them immediately to my... to Jeremy, to my son. And I gave them to him. I mean, wonderful firearms, like you wouldn't believe. And I'd simply say, clear that weapon. And so, and him being a Marine, he knew what I was saying. So, but I don't understand the obsession with guns, other than when they come to the door, you want to have something other than a ball bat.
Who's going to come to the door? Who, you know, what are you really so afraid of? Does this, like, happen often? Yeah, I mean, you know, I went through that brief period where I was sort of interested in guns, and I was interested in the survival movement and the prepper movement, and we got to build our own bunker and stock it up with freeze-dried food and water and guns and ammo, especially ammo. But I quickly grew out of that phase because I started to realize, man, these people are crazy. Maybe not all of them, but... So, yeah, I don't really understand that fascination either. But, you know, even, I think you can open carry in this state. But, you know, the... the high-capacity Glock, with or whatever it was, with the two extra magazines, you're just going into the convenience store. What kind of firefight are you expecting to get involved in going into the convenience store to pay for your gasoline or whatever? You know, what are you expecting to happen that you got to be armed all the time everywhere you go?
Lever and a revolver. 6 rounds. And one empty. I just don't believe in anything more than that. And, I mean, seriously, if you can't do it in 4 or 5 rounds out of a revolver, what are you going to do? I'm not that person. Now, I'm also thinking, you know, they went into Walmart some time ago and somebody opened fire. I am sick to death of these people with guns. I am sick of it. And so I am seriously tired. What? Too many people have got these illicit guns. And I swear to God, I cannot get in line with that. But they went into Texas, into that Walmart in El Paso. And they opened fire. In Texas? Are you serious? That is the state where you don't want to have people walking around. And but some fool went in there and did that. I don't know if they got him. I don't know what happened about that. But I'm so tired of people with guns wandering around. My God, really? Let's go back to bow and arrows.
I'll ask you about revolvers because, you know, not often you get a stoppage in a revolver. You know, when your life depends on it, and it generally always does, the revolver will pretty much always fire. But, yeah, I wouldn't even wouldn't even really entertain the thought of going around. You know, whenever it's like, whenever you got too many arms and too much ammo, people get stupid for whatever reason. You know, disputes tend to escalate. Hey, what? Well, the guy was in my parking spot, man, so I shot him. What did I read in one of the news feeds? Someone killed his wife over, I forget what it was over. You know, some dinner, he didn't like what she served for dinner or things, something like that. So, some people just really shouldn't, probably most people. But yeah, you seem to have a lot of that down here for whatever reason, or in the South generally.
Say that about the South. And because, yeah, I understand, and I am absolutely one of these people who, as I age, has turned against firearms. I believe in the Second Amendment. But if you read the dadblam thing, you'll know what it means. And it means for, you know, other reasons, not simply to walk around with a gun. And I'm not into that. I'm not into it. I just don't like it. But I don't like people showing up at gas pumps shooting each other either. But I'm not getting in a firefight. I was drafted. And no, I will never carry a gun again. It's just not going to happen in my life. It's just not going to happen. But if I were to need to, I'll produce one in a moment. But it won't ever happen. I don't need it. And I don't carry. And KB is sort of, Kim is sort of the same way as I am. And she's much more, well, where I wouldn't do something, she might. Wow. Isn't that something to say about your wife? But she's, like I said, that skinny little white girl. You got to worry about them.
You have, well, I was going to say you have someone to keep you in check, but apparently she lets you, maybe she gives you too much freedom, but at least you have someone who compliments you in some way. I mean, in the sense that, you know, someone who's like you but who isn't. You have complementary personalities. That's kind of what I had with Deborah. We had opposite personalities. Well, there's opposites and then there's complements. Our personalities were opposite, but in the sense that was good because, you know, they complemented each other. She was, you know, characteristics that I didn't have and vice versa. So, you know, it's good that you found that. You've been married 30-something years, you said. You know, bless you, man. That's really great.
The funny thing that I say, people will say, where did you meet your wife? Well, I say, well, I was driving through the desert in New Mexico. That should be a heads up right there. And I passed this thing on the side of the road, and I got out and threw it in the back of the truck, went to the gas station to figure out what I had found. I hosed it down real good, and it was my wife. She liked to kill. She almost shot me that day. It's so funny because I said that, and she liked to beat me to death that moment when I accidentally said that out loud, because I took her to the gas station and washed her down good and found it was my wife. And it got funnier and funnier. But, you know, one day I flew into Dallas. I can't remember why I did Dallas. I can't. And I had never driven a Geo. Remember them? And so I asked them, let me rent this car. It's called Geo. I want to see what it's like. Well, I ran over an armadillo, and I figured it out. And I, like, tore the undercarriage of that car out. But when I got to her apartment, it said, a banner on the front of the house said, "Welcome home." Well, I had to marry her then.